Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Detox Life. So here we are in my bathroom on the floor, a pillow behind my back, blanket over my legs. This is my life. I live in a two-bedroom. However, we have 2.5 bathrooms. Kind of annoying that we have more bathrooms than bedrooms. We live in a townhouse. We live in Charlotte, North Carolina. I am Kelly Carpenter, 32 years old. What else can I tell you guys? I'm talking to you all like you are my followers from Instagram and you've faithfully been listening to me for a while. But for those of you who are brand new, I am Kelly. On Instagram, known as Kelly Carpenter from @thedetoxedlife. And I am here partially because I have been asked quite a few times from a lot of different people, when are you going to start a podcast? And I have been like, yeah, maybe one day that would be cool. I mean, I do really like to talk, so that would work. The funny thing is, guys, I don't really listen to podcasts that much. And I think that was my hesitation. I felt not genuine to create something that I don't even listen to often. But to be honest, I'm a mom of 2 small children. Arlen is going to be 3 soon and Roman is 4 months old. And I just don't have the time to listen to long form podcasts. And you know what I've learned about myself is that I actually get lost in thought very often. So you ever, you know, been sitting reading a book and you know, you read a paragraph and then you realize that you didn't read that paragraph. Well, you read it. You just started thinking about something else. So you have to reread the paragraph. I'm starting to become that way. Maybe it's mom brain. Even with listening to a podcast, I'll get into it. And then my child will walk by or ask for a snack or, you know, something will happen. A message will pop up on my phone. And then I realize I missed the last 5 minutes of the podcast. So I have to start all over. And that's just kind of where my life's at right now. So anyways, I was a little hesitant to begin one, but I've had so many people say something to me recently, I kind of just thought, you know what, maybe this is a sign and I need to stop ignoring it, that this podcast needs to happen. I will say that when I was talking to my sister-in-law about doing this, she actually has a super successful podcast. I don't even know, Jessica, I apologize, but I want to say it's something like close to 3 million downloads on, it's a kids Bible story podcast. And so I was calling her up and asking her for advice on how to get started, what to use, and she's the one who helped me figure this all out. So thank you, Jessica. And so we were chatting about it, and I was sharing with her what I was going to do. And it's funny because this first episode, if you couldn't already tell, is going to be a little bit of my story and why I'm even doing this podcast. I felt like it was important to obviously start there. Most people are going to have questions, want to know a little bit about me and what I'm going to be trying to accomplish here. And really, at the end of the day, I want to be able to have a platform that is not censored as much as social media is censored. I feel like Instagram, Facebook, YouTube have all become incredibly censored, and we will probably have a whole podcast about that later. But, and I want to be able to do long form. I feel like obviously YouTube, you can do long form, but it requires a video. And I was actually saying the practicality of recording a podcast is actually a lot simpler, especially as a mom who has to sit in a bathroom late at night to record these things, as opposed to having to like do your makeup and your hair and look presentable and get good lighting. And like, video is a lot of work. So hats off to anyone with a YouTube channel. It's a ton of work. And so with that, I thought, you know, I'd love to be able to do long form. It's kind of hard to do on Facebook. It's kind of hard to do on Instagram. And I wanted to be able to do that and be able to have longer conversations, and then also conversations that wouldn't disappear, weren't controlled by an algorithm or anything else, and that I would be able to have links on my website and all of that. My website is kellyannecarpenter.com. Is that my website? kellycarpenter.com. What am I saying? Guys, it's been a long day. I'll put it in the notes, the show notes. Kelly, my brain, it's not good. It's mush. This is what happens when you have children and you age, I guess. I don't know. I take such good care of myself, which we will get into on this podcast as well. At least, you know, comparatively in my life, I'd probably take the best care of myself than I ever have in a lot of ways, although in other ways I'm a mom, so we always obviously are last to take care of ourselves in that regard too. I digress. So how did I end up here with this podcast, guys? I am going to start at the beginning because when I'm on Instagram, I don't ever get to do this. I keep it pretty short and brief and I just kind of hit the highlights. So we're going to go backwards to 2011. Is that where I want to start? Around or 2013? No. Yeah. Like maybe 2013. So my husband and I were presented with a unique opportunity to move to another country and to do some nonprofit ministry related work. So we decided to take that opportunity. It was in Mexico. And my husband quit school. He was in school at that time. I obviously quit my job. He quit his job. We raised the money through a lot of generous friends and family and partners who supported us while being there. And then we also obviously had a lot of our own savings, but we went down there at a very, if I'm being honest, it was a very tough 2 years for so many reasons. If anyone's ever lived abroad, acculturating is quite difficult. You would hope that you would be good at it, but it's actually very difficult to move to another culture, especially one that doesn't have your native tongue. You don't know what anyone's saying. We took Rosetta Stone 1. Both of us ironically took French in high school, and so we didn't know a lick of Spanish, and so we just did Rosetta 1 and then went down there, good faith, that we would pick it up, because that's what you do when you move to a country. You get immersed, and you just get forced to learn the language. We were so hopeful that we would come back completely fluent. Let me just tell you guys, well, when you move somewhere that has a high tourist population and your Spanish is terrible, everyone just defaults to English because they know both. So that's what happened. And so we were not forced to learn, and it was super grating and really tough. And I probably came back knowing, I had a proficient Spanish to go into a store, have a conversation with someone, get what I needed, come out, that kind of basic stuff. I understood a good amount. Now, if you asked me anything, I would be like, oh, goodness. But anyway, so we lived there for 2 years. And during that time, we got parasites multiple times, really, really sick. My husband got the sickest he really had ever been in his life. And we also lived in, unique conditions in a cement box, effectively, that got wet, that got moldy, that was filled with rodents, that was definitely not hygienic and not great for anyone's body to be under for multiple years. So before we went down there, we had been married for like 18 months when we went down there. So not very long. However, guys, you need to understand that I knew my whole life I wanted to be a mom. When I sat down on my first date with my husband, I said to him, I would like a lot of children. And if you are not for that, then we probably shouldn't go on a second date. No, I'm not kidding. That conversation was had on our first date, and I was 22 years old. I just didn't have time to mess around with men. I wasn't interested in that. I did not want to date someone who wasn't going in the same direction as me, didn't want the same things as me, and I'd rather be single than waste my time attaching myself to someone who didn't want the same things as me. So, he agreed. And we got married 2 years later, almost to the month, and so I got married at 24. And was hoping to start trying for kids at 25. That was kind of my hope. But we had to get all my school loans paid off. And we had to make sure I was going to be able to stay home with them, because that's what I wanted. I wanted to be able to be home with them. So we needed to be able to live off my husband's income. And in the midst of all that, we moved to Mexico. But I said to my husband, if we go to Mexico, I don't want this to prolong our timeline for kids. Like, I don't want to agree to go down there for 2 years and then have to wait 2 more years to even start trying and then be in my late 20s. Like, I didn't want that. For those of you who know, I had Arlen at 29 years old. So our story began we actually started trying a few months after we got to Mexico. And you might be going, what were y'all thinking? Okay, so this is what we were thinking. I was pretty well versed in natural childbirth. I actually, the woman and husband who's lived down there, and we were kind of taking over their business, they had had a child down there. So I picked her brain before we moved down and said, like, where did you have him? How are the hospitals? Like, how did you feel about everything? Like, being an American, having your kid there, did you feel safe? Did you have all the things you needed? Like, all the things. And so I formulated a plan. I had looked at how much it would cost us to have a doula, to get midwives, to have babies at the hospitals, all that stuff. And it was actually dirt cheap, guys. Because of our dollar being so strong at that point in time, it was going to cost us something like $1,500, and we had our own personal savings that we could use for it. So I thought I had a plan. I thought all was well and it would go great. Well, about 4 months in, still weren't pregnant, and I just felt like something was off. And I started to feel infertile. People always ask me that, like, so when did you know? Like, how did you know, like, when to start pursuing things? And I was like, well, if you go by typical standards, they will say, you know, if you're under 35, 12 months is when you will get slapped with the sticker of infertile. They will not call you that until you've had 12 months of trying. And then if you're above 35, usually it's like 6 months, they fast track everything. But so got a bunch of testing done actually in Mexico, found a fertility specialist in Monterey, because that's what I do. I get on the computer, I figure things out. We found a fertility specialist. We started to go to doctor's appointments, had all sorts of fun tests, all sorts of fun ones. I mean, they did everything from, you know, I had to go in like every 3 days so that they could measure the growth of my follicles, make sure that my eggs were, you know, growing as they should be, and like all the things were in the right places. My husband and I had to do some not so fun married people tests. And, you know, time all, let's just call it, well, he had to time married people things and then go right into the doctor's office afterwards. And they had to do all sorts of fun tests, and everything was coming back normal, thing after thing after thing after thing. So what do they do in the fertility world when all the tests come back normal? Well, they go, well, we could start you on Clomid, which is basically a drug that forces your body to let out multiple eggs. So instead of your body releasing one egg, you release multiple eggs, which also releases your chance to have twins or multiples. And I just wasn't comfortable with it. I was the girl who was never on birth control because it just did not make me comfortable. I actually tried it once because I had such terrible periods my whole life, like an agony, would miss work, would miss school, that they always wanted to put me on them. And I was like, it doesn't make sense. You say that you want to put me on these hormones to regulate my period and therefore make it less painful. My period was regular as hell. It was every 28 days, like clockwork. And so I was like, that doesn't make sense. So I just never did it. Except one time I got desperate. I took birth control for 2 days. I felt like I had the flu, guys. I felt so sick that I was like, I cannot take a third pill. I will not do this. So I didn't. And that was like when I was maybe, gosh, 19, 20. I never did it again. So I just was like, okay, I don't feel comfortable even taking birth control. So why would I feel comfortable putting all of these other hormones and chemicals into my body? So fast forward, I'm a spiritual person. I'm a believer. And I'd been praying a lot about it, kind of like just honestly crying out to God, asking for answers, and didn't know what to do. And the way that I feel like the Lord speaks to me is through peace. And so I kept just trying to say, like, give me a peace. Like, so if I'm supposed to keep pursuing this, if we're supposed to do all the tests and all the things, then like, please make that clear to me. Like keep that nag inside of me, so to speak. And like, don't let me have a peace about it. But if we need to stop, like, give me a peace about that. And he is always faithful to answer me. And I felt I used to go on these long walks up into this canyon that we had. We lived at the base of a mountain, and I would sing worship songs, and I would oftentimes cry, and I would pray. And I felt very, very strongly that the Lord said, Kelly, you need to give this to me. So very unwillingly, I did. And I told my husband about it. I said, I just feel like we're not supposed to do any more tests. And the second that I did that, I instantly felt like a weight drop off my shoulders. Like, it was instant. Like, I just felt like I could exhale. Like, there was an elephant that had been sitting on my chest and it was gone. And that's how he speaks to me. And so that's what happened. And so I didn't know what was going to happen. Well, that was 8 months, or actually 9 months exactly, which I thought was definitely the Lord, that it was exactly 9 months into trying that he was like, you need to let this go. So we did. And 2 years And 1 month later is when we finally got pregnant with Arlen. So it was almost just under 3 years that it took us to get pregnant. But let's talk about what happened after that 9th month. So it always bothered me that I couldn't get answers, that doctors were saying everything was fine with my husband, everything was fine with me. Like, we were 26 years old, guys. Like, it doesn't make sense that two seemingly healthy 26-year-old, both, you know, we were at very healthy weights. We didn't have any like underlying health issues. We had everything tested on my husband and I, and everything kept coming back quote unquote normal. Yet I was deemed with what they call unexplained infertility, which is in about 10% of women who have fertility issues, they say is unexplained. So we were that case. And it just never sat right with me. If you know anything about me, you follow me on any of my other platforms, you know that I am a massive questioner and a huge researcher. It's just in my nature to question everyone and everything. I've always been like that. When I was young and people used to ask me to do things, it was always like, but why? Why? Like, that was me. Even now, like, I have vivid memories of my middle school teachers, some of them, not all of them, but some of them not liking me because I used to just question all of their things that they would ask me to do. But why can't I do my art project that way? Like, but why? And it just bothered me. So that is my personality. It always has been. And so I just dug. And in my digging and in my pursuit for a simpler life, for a better life, for an explanations and infertility, I went through this journey of like reading books on minimalism. My husband and I were desperately wanting to be able to save and own a home. So we started looking into like the tiny house movement and minimalism, all that kind of came together. And in following people through Instagram, through those movements, you just kind of start to stumble on people who have these like simpler lives. And then that kind of stumbled me into the low waste movement because I was looking at getting rid of things to like downsize, right? And to potentially live into a tiny home. And then low waste, you know, kind of led me into kind of a non-toxic communities of sorts that I started to follow people, listen to people. And along the way, I stumbled into learning about the Environmental Working Group, which is this incredible organization. Ken Cook, and I always forget his partner, but they began the Environmental Working Group, and it basically seeks to create transparency within really just industry at the end of the day. But they do a lot of education on toxins, on chemicals. You're able to go into their database on their website. They have a couple databases actually, and look up what is what their products are rated. So you could go type in like a Dove soap bar in their Skin Deep database, and it would tell you the ingredients in it. It would tell you what those ingredients are rated. They have a scale of 1 to 10, and then they go through everything, like the functions of that chemical, the other names for that chemical, synonyms, the different restrictions on it, if it's carcinogenic, if it's an immunotoxin, like all of the things that you could ever want to know. And my eyes were just opened up. So immediately when you do that, you're like, well, I'm going to start scanning everything in my cabinet. And this actually started, some of it started before I got pregnant, but I had really mostly been working on my diet because I just was convinced that there must be things that we're eating, something's going on. So obviously started to shift towards organic, started to shift towards looking into plant-based diets. And then also I was looking into getting gluten-free and dairy-free so that those two things we did do. We also found out along the way when we came back from Mexico that my husband had been breaking out in hives a lot. And so we got him allergy test and found out he was allergic to wheat, which we had never known. And we ate plenty of wheat. So he got off of that, got gluten-free. And it was actually within about 6 weeks of getting gluten-free that we found ourselves pregnant. So I don't really know what the triggers were, what the factors are. At the end of the day, I do think diet was massive. I do think that there was underlying inflammation and things causing problems probably in my husband's body that we just weren't aware of, and potentially in mine. Also, dairy, you know, can, depending on who you speak to and depending on your research, but can really mess with your hormones. So I was quite the dairy lover. I'm Italian. I grew up on a lot of cheese, yogurt, ice cream, just regular milk. I loved milk and cereal. I mean, all the things, guys. If you met me 5 years ago, even though I was a little bit thinner than I am now, I was not eating I mean, I wasn't eating terribly, but I was not eating well in what I now know to be well. So, totally changed my diet, found ourselves pregnant, shocked. I mean, honestly shocked. I had kind of, I mean, I don't want to say I'd given up hope, but I'd kind of all but given up hope. And, something else that a lot of people don't know about me is that I've always felt called to adopt. Like, my husband and I, before we were even engaged, were talking about adopting children, and I really desperately hope that we can and that we do. And so I got to this point where I was just like, well, maybe this is a sign. We're just like meant to adopt. And so I had been digging into adoption. Obviously, it's quite costly, or can be. And so we were kind of trying to figure out how we'd be able to financially do it. And I was doing all the research for it. And that's when we found out we were pregnant with Arlen, which kind of like turned everything 180. I had an amazingly healthy pregnancy. I obviously went crazy with studying how to protect this pregnancy. And that's really what started me on this path. So I had just started to dig into toxins. I had just reformed my diet. And then I had this baby now inside of me. And obviously I was hoping to carry it to term and to have a healthy pregnancy. So I came to the EWG. I got rid of, I mean, probably 90%. I remember vividly, there was an app at the time that I was using to scan products and like look at the ratings. And I remember walking through, and sorry for the language, just being pissed. And I remember just being like, oh my gosh, there's cancer in this. There's cancer in this. There's cancer in this. What is this? And like, I remember telling my husband, I was like, Kenny, I threw away your deodorant, our shampoo, conditioner, body wash. I just like threw it all away. And I was like, this is terrible. I will go and figure out what we can replace this with. Same with our laundry detergents, everything. And I was using like the free and clear kind of stuff. And I kind of thought that I was using better, you know, products. You just think like, oh, I'm using like great stuff. But I also was really thrifty. So I was using like the $4 dry shampoos and, you know, the drugstore $7 makeup, which now makes me cringe. I actually just got off a live that we did in our private communities on Facebook, and we had a representative there from the makeup brand Crunchy, and it blew my mind when I was looking into this brand. The owners have done a fantastic job with creating this non-toxic makeup, and if you understand anything about the world of cosmetics, you understand that our cosmetic industry is, the legislation on it is 80 years old. Our cosmetic laws have not been changed in 80 years. We also have 60,000 chemicals that have been grandfathered into basically industry here in the United States that have never been tested for safety, guys. It's bananas. So we're going to shift into toxin talk now, if you couldn't tell. And so I was throwing everything out. I was learning so much, and I was starting to shift into just looking into low waste, following people who are minimal, all that good stuff. Went through my pregnancy, did all the natural things, had my son naturally at a birthing center, cloth diapering, like the whole nine yards, and had him. He was thankfully a very healthy little boy. And but because of everything that I had learned, I just went deeper into that rabbit hole. And along the way, I started a low-waste sustainability Instagram that was just called @kelly.ann.carpenter. I worked really hard to build that account out and met some really fantastic people along the way who were also low waste and sustainable. And in that wonderful community, I met a beautiful woman named Sarah. Her Instagram is Mama Revolution, and she works with a company called doTERRA. They are the largest essential oil company in the world. They have over 9 million customers worldwide, and they make incredible product, are beyond sustainable, and their harvesting practices. They are working really hard to grow in their sustainability with their packaging. They're incredibly transparent, super generous, and I was following Sarah, and I felt like I had met my toxin buddy. And so learning more from her and continuing my own search, and eventually realized that, you know, with low waste, I was cutting a lot of toxins out of my life. I was already cutting toxins out by, you know, looking for companies that were rated really well on the EWG. But then I met the world of essential oils, and I was like blown away by this product that is above grade organic, that would allow me to DIY and control every single ingredient in my product. So I can make all my cleaning products, I can make my laundry products, I can make my baby's, you know, rash balm and, you know, cloth diaper spray, and I could make his shampoo, and I could have even more control over what's in my products. And I was sold. So that's a little bit about how my journey went. It might feel like a little bit of a roller coaster, and it kind of was in a way, but it really just came from my eyes being opened up through things that I was reading and researching, going through pregnancy, going through infertility, wanting answers. And I am happy to say that I am now the mom of two healthy boys. Second pregnancy was unplanned, but it was a happy surprise. And we were actually talking about starting to try soon when we found out that we were pregnant with Roman. That is my other son. And I swear that the reason that we got pregnant with him without even trying compared to Roman, I mean, compared to Arlen, who we had tried for years, to have, is because I had just grown in that time span since I was pregnant with Arlen, and then about 2 years after he was born was when I got pregnant with Roman. So in those 2 years, just really hammered it on toxins. I mean, everything from like getting rid of clothes to, you know, DIYing all my own products to really narrowing in onto eating like 95% organic, like anywhere I can get organic, I do. To having a Berkey water filter, to all the things that we have done to try to detox our lives. My kids wear all organic clothing or secondhand. You know, I bought my son's mattress, and it's completely, like amazingly toxin free. And I started to learn about all these areas that I could cut toxins out of my life. And I know without a shadow of a doubt, that is why I got pregnant without even trying. I know it in my soul. Our diets have changed. I'm supplementing like I never have before, and my supplements are top notch from doTERRA. I feel so much better on them. My pregnancies were so different. I mean, my second pregnancy was still hard. Obviously, it's still pregnancy, but I felt so much better postpartum than with Arlen. It's like, I can't even explain to you how much better I felt. And they were both natural, you know, births and both in birthing centers and all those things. But my postpartum experience was night and day. And so that is kind of how I got to where I am. And so once I started using doTERRA essential oils, I think it was only maybe four to five months in, I started talking to Sarah about potentially being involved in doing the business side of it, because I was like, people need to know about this. I want to be a part of this because my life has been changed forever by detoxing my life. I share about this on my Instagram already, but now I want it to be in my life in a way that it never has been before, which means like, you know, expanding my reach with this message, which is everything in our planet, it feels like, is just covered in toxins. Our industry is not, or in our legislation out there, especially in the US, which is what I'll speak to mostly on this podcast probably. Our legislation is abhorrent, guys. It is unreal the amount of chemicals that are allowed in products that are not safety tested. It is crazy the amount of products that are on shelves that are not safe, that are filled with known carcinogens. Formaldehyde isn't everything, guys. Our clothing is dipped in formaldehyde. Skincare products, nail polish, shampoos have formaldehyde in them. They use it so that it basically makes the product like antibacterial, or if there's concerns about bacteria, or if there is some sort of reason something needs to be preserved, like with clothing, they will include formaldehyde, which is there's no debate about it. Let's just put it this way. There's no debate that formaldehyde is a known carcinogen. Look it up. It's a known carcinogen, known human carcinogen, and it is everywhere, guys. It is absurd. And it also has like 15 or 20 other names. Like look it up on the EWG and you'll look for synonyms for formaldehyde. So you can't even just look on a package anymore, know that formaldehyde is a known carcinogen, and then look for formaldehyde on labels. You can't even do that, guys, because it has like 20 other names that it also could be labeled under on a label. Like our ingredient laws are, they're horrifying. And the fact that companies like Johnson & Johnson still exist and are still on shelves goes to speak to our cosmetic laws, actually, which are not protected. Like, let's say an E. coli breakout happened within food. The FDA has the ability to mandate or pull the food that has been E. coli contaminated off the shelves, meaning that if there was like a lettuce outbreak that had E. coli, they could make all stores get rid of that product for safety reasons. The same thing were to happen in a baby shampoo, the FDA does not have that pull. So there were some instances in, I'm not sure of the year off the top of my head right now, and I don't want to get it wrong, but there have been children's products that had asbestos in them, particularly children's play makeup and like Halloween makeup. And there was asbestos found in it, and they did not and could not pull it off the shelves, which is actually insane. Yeah, that is how our world works. That is how America works. And other countries, it's not just America, trust me. It's really, really crazy. And that is why I do what I do. I am a non-toxic educator. I educate on how to utilize essential oils to detox your life, but I also educate on everything in between. So I get on and I talk about clothing and why it matters that we wear organic clothing or buy secondhand. I get on and talk about water filters or air purifiers, toxins in our makeup, you know, all the things that can contribute to our health being impaired. And I could not be more passionate about it. And you can ask my family. I annoy my mom with it all the time. I'm like, what are you putting on your face? What is that candle that you're about to light? Throw that away, please. Can you throw that away? She gets really mad. But it is really all out of care and concern, because I know it gets overwhelming to a lot of people. I have conversations with my mom all the time. Hi, mom, if you're listening. And she will definitely say things like, well, okay, Kelly, I know everything's bad. It's all bad. But, and she gets overwhelmed. She gets frustrated with it. But the reality is there is so, so much that is bad and that we do need to care about. And so, I don't know about you, but I'm not okay with knowing that a toy is going to off gas in my kid's face. I'm just not. Like, it's just not okay. I'm not okay with my child sucking on a plastic toy or having a plastic toy in their bathtub that is leaching the chemicals into their water and then they're bathing in it. I'm not okay with the fact that there's formaldehyde in a lot of shampoos, which is a known carcinogen, and people are using them every single day on their scalp, which is absorbing into their skin, which is going into their bloodstream. Are you okay with that? Because I'm not okay with that. I'm not okay with pesticides and herbicides and glyphosate on food that's ruining people's lives and giving people cancer. I'm not okay that the average age of cancer in the United States is 6 years old. Are you okay with that? The average age of children's, actually, like the average age that a child is found to have cancer is 6 years old. Like, these are things that should not only make us question everything, but should make us mad, angry. And we should want to advocate for our children, because if I don't, who will? My kids have to grow up in this world. If I get hit by a car tomorrow, who's going to advocate for them? Who's going to keep the formaldehyde off of them? Who is going to check to make sure that their foods aren't filled with pesticides and herbicides and that are killing them? Chronic disease is at an all-time high in the United States, along with obesity, along with, you know, autoimmune disorders, along with cancer. 100 years ago, I was reading not long ago, 100 years ago, cancer was something like 1 in... I'm going to get this wrong. I think I was reading, it was prior to the 50s, it was like 1 in 10. And then now it's closer to 1 in 3 people will have cancer before like the end of their life. It oscillates between 1 in 3 and 1 in 4, depending on the cancer. Guys, that's nuts. 25 to 30-ish percent of people in America are going to cancer before they die. And we're all just, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not the only one, but there's so many people who aren't asking questions, who aren't asking why, who brush off when I say things about, because don't trust me and believe me, guys, like I have family members. I get brushed off by people all the time who think that I am like over the top. Kelly, what are you going to do? Never buy a plastic toy? Yeah. Actually, yes. If it means shifting dollars away from companies who are doing the wrong things and shifting those dollars to companies who are making beautiful hand-carved wooden toys out of sustainable wood and flaxseed oil. Yes, damn straight. I'm going to not buy plastic toys. You know what I mean? Like, and a lot of the toys that my kids have that are plastic have all been gifted, by the way. Sorry, parents, grandparents. That's just the truth. Like, I don't buy them for my kids. And so it matters, guys. I haven't bought a baby bathtub. Let me just talk about that for a second. I spent, oh my gosh, I can't even tell you, 6 months of my pregnancy with Roman looking for a gosh darn baby bath that was not made out of foam, PVC, plastic, PPU. It's a type of like polyurethane plastic. Can't find it, guys. It doesn't exist. I was looking in Europe. I was looking in like Hungary for these old school like metal bathtubs that they used to exist on these stands. And I was looking at them. They're like hundreds of dollars and you can only find them like years and years old. And like I couldn't get anyone to ship them to me. Couldn't find a stainless steel bathtub, baby bathtub. They like, don't exist. They don't exist, guys. And I know because I spent like 6 months searching. It's absurd. But why did I care so much? Because my baby is going to sit in that. Their skin, their largest organ. Brand new babies are going to sit in plastic and foams that are leaching toxins into the water. And I'm going to let my baby soak in that. And our skin, guys, it's our largest organ. It covers us. And I'm going to be okay with that leaching into my baby. I can't do it. I couldn't bring myself to do it. So now I literally basically sponge bath my baby and awkwardly wash him quickly in the sink because this is the world that we live in. Is it a pain in the butt? Yes. Does it make me angry? So angry, guys. So angry that I literally yesterday was like, maybe I have to invent this. I was trying to figure out a way to invent like an all, you know, natural rubber baby bath the other day. I'm sitting here just racking my brains because I'm like, this shouldn't be this hard to get something that is safe for my child. And by the way, if you're about to say like, Kelly, there's not toxic baths out there. No, there aren't, guys. When you know how to research and you understand what you're looking for, there aren't. The Pooj one, P-U-J, it's not non-toxic. So don't at me. I did all the research, guys. They're not. They all contain foams, plastics. They're not safe. They claim to be non-toxic, but we'll have another episode on that on how companies can claim to be organic, non-toxic, all natural, and they aren't. And it's legal for them to do so. Non-toxic is just an expression, really, at the end of the day, in terms of labeling laws. So anyone can say their product is non-toxic and it's not really defined. Like, so what are toxins? What does it mean to be non-toxic? There's no certification. So it's just something that people slap on their products. So you have to actually know what they're made of and you have to learn how to research, which is partially what I teach people to do. I get people asking me to tell them if stuff is safe on a regular basis. And I'm sorry if I haven't replied to you or if I replied to you and told you that I can't because I literally would spend my life doing it. And I've taught myself how to research and how to email companies and ask questions because this matters, guys. And this is what I'm going to talk about on this podcast. Like, it matters so much to me. Can't even tell you. My kids' baby's towels are organic, non-dyed cotton. My kids are in organic cotton and hemp cloth diapers. I buy secondhand clothing or organic clothing wherever I can. I like right now, my son is growing so fast and secondhand shops are not open due to COVID and it's killing me because I literally cannot bring myself to order clothes that are new, that are not organic. And organic clothing right now, because of the way the world is costly. It's expensive. And I'm sitting here going like, how am I going to afford this? I've got to figure out a way. I secondhand a lot of stuff. Because at least with secondhand clothing, what we know is that the hope is that they've been worn for a lot of time and washed a lot of time, especially kids' clothing, to at least have gotten out a lot of the chemicals, the formaldehyde, the things that would have been in that clothing, pesticides, the herbicides. It's still not super fun to think about. And the problem is that people aren't really putting a bunch of money into researching how long it takes for those chemicals to come out of the clothing, or if they do. And I would love somebody to do a study, like take a kid's piece of clothing, test it for a bunch of chemicals, and then wash it like, you know, 200 times and keep testing it for washes to see when these are chemicals are out of it. Please, somebody out there, please, if you're listening to this, how do we fund that? I will be your campaigner. Oh man, would I love that. And so, you know, that it, these things accumulate, guys. Our bodies will accumulate these toxins, and we have something called toxic burden. If you're not familiar with that, look it up. Google what toxic burden is. And it's the fact that our bodies can't keep up. You basically become toxic burdened when you have more chemicals coming into your body than your body can like output, that your kidneys, that your liver can actually like process and try to get out of your body. So what happens is they bioaccumulate. And when that happens, all the bad stuff happens, guys. The infertility, the cancer, the autoimmune diseases, all of these things. And if you're someone who suffered from any of these things, I would highly encourage you to be the first person to hop onto this bandwagon and to start researching and to start self-advocating. Because unfortunately, a lot of doctors out there know nothing about this. If you're not going to a holistic naturopathic doctor, this probably isn't on the radar. And even if you are going to a naturalistic, naturopathic, you know, holistic doctor, even some of them aren't the greatest at it, or they're old school, or they're not up to date on research, or they don't, you know, research all the things. They focus more so on the body. They don't necessarily focus on toxins and studying them and researching them and researching products. So even then, you still have to self-advocate a lot with what you bring into your home and what you purchase and what you utilize. And it can be a lot, which is why people like me exist. So that's what I want this podcast to be. I want this podcast to be an extension of my Instagram, of what I do in our private communities, and of what I educate people on. I'm going to hop on here and talk about all the things. Probably do a whole episode on cloth diapering. Probably do whole episodes on things like, you know, whatever I'm digging into at the time, you know, air pollution in the home, water, the toxins that are in our water. I will probably do a whole episode on the EWG, you know, all of these types of things. I want people to understand this, because this message needs to be everywhere, and we need to be shifting our dollars away from industries that are killing us, literally. And we need to be, you know, in the White House demanding that these laws be changed. And thankfully, there are beautiful companies out there and all sorts of wonderful people who are doing those things, but it's not enough. And we need it to be more, and we need more people to refuse to buy these things so that we can drive down prices, and we can create competition, and that will drive down prices. And that's really what we need to happen. We need everybody to be demanding organic cotton, because then industry will feel that. They will feel that no one's buying their cotton clothing anymore that's covered in pesticides and herbicides, and that people are demanding organic. It's slowly happening. You see it here and there. Companies like Gap are starting to carry organic baby lines, and people are realizing that it is out there. But it's not enough, and it's definitely not being shouted from the rooftops and on the news enough. So that is what I want to do with this podcast. That's a little bit about me, a little bit about my background. I hope this was interesting. I can't wait to post this and do the next several episodes and kind of have 4 or 5 ready for you to kind of listen through. My hope is to do them, you know, as often as I can. So I hope I can do a few a month. I have this business I run, and I have my little ones, but I will get on here as much as I can. I will put all of my links to my website and to my Instagram, Facebook, and all that good stuff in show notes. You know, contact me, reach out. I want to know who you are. You can always shoot me an email. I'll put my email in here too. I'm sure I'll do listener questions. I would love questions. I'll happy to do episodes on things that you guys send in, all the good stuff. But until then, I'm going to be signing off from my bathroom floor. This will probably be where I record all my podcasts. And I'm looking forward to it, guys. This is fun for me. I hope it is fun for you. And I hope you learn a ton And I know I will as well. I hope to bring on fantastic guests here and there as I can. And let's change the world, guys. Love you all.